Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is about a minute past the hour on this, the 12th day of August, 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And I'm proud to say that with a little bit of help, thank you, Kelly, in Calgary. A little bit of help, well, I'm back in the chat room, easy peasy. And so are Anatole and Jeremy and Vermont, Chuck Punch, all capably moderated by a longtime veteran, indefatigable, inveterate chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Yes, indeed. You too, if you care to join in. Right? All you got to do is go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, and pick yourself out a screen name and a password. You'll be right there in the midst of the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the chat during the live portion of the broadcast. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Jeremy in Vermont noting loud and clear on TuneIn. Bob, the chat room seems much faster tonight, too. Oh, goody. Yes, and welcome in. I had just given the hey, howdy, how are you, when our buddy Texas T popped into the room. So, good evening. Also, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the ever-present Contribute tab. That's the interface for PayPal. That's where you go if you would like to be part of the, the process that keeps all of this going. We also use the U.S. Postal Service, and I'll get to that in a minute. I always do. I wonder how many of you just kind of fast-forward past this part of the program. Anyway, at the PayPal interface, you can ignore the more intrusive questions and just get to the next screen where you can make your contribution to help keep all of this going. Now, I am proud to announce that we have a show on me for the evening. We try to raise $200 every evening. This is no different. And we have Mark to thank this evening. Yes, we do. We have a note as well. Mark says, it's that time of the year. Finally, the last week of summer school. For me, that means two things. First, I get my 2 weeks surcease before the next semester begins. And second, I get paid for having taught summer school. That being the case, the second, that is, it's time to spread the wealth with my family, excluding the credit card companies, which are most certainly not family. I was wondering if it would be okay to sponsor the whole prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. You can call it the School's Out, Bob's Not Ciphering Tonight night, or maybe Separation of Church and Ciphering evening. And that we shall. Since the evening's program will be taken care of, maybe other donations can be used to bump up the equipment fund, so we'll throw in $100 for the equipment fund, though the horn gets to keep the whole $100, okay? Yep. So that's good news, too. That takes us down to around $1,500 to go in the equipment fund. Last week, Mark observes, the Minister of Music seemed to be temporarily disabled, much to everyone's snortalicious enjoyment last week, so I've attached a piece that might be useful for a musical offering, although perhaps a little Catholic for the show. Obviously, your call. It's the Monk's Aria, and how can I resist something with a title like this? It's the Monk's Aria from PDQ Box, Hansel and Gretel and Ted and Alice. I giggled the first time I read it, and I giggle every time I see it. An opera in one unnatural act. I am vaguely familiar with PDQ Bach, a.k.a. Peter Schickele. But not as much as I probably need to be, and I'm glad to see this and hear this. So there will be a stand-in for the Minister of Music this evening. Yes, indeed. Right. So, Mark says, one last thing. In addition to getting paid to be a professional bullshitter, or lecturer at university, my husband Carlo and I have a fashion startup company called Carlo Matar. We're so excited because we're about to release our first season's line. Ooh, I want to see it. Part of our corporate purpose is to support the environment by making our clothes in an environmentally responsible manner and to buy carbon offsets for what we can't. We're also donating a yet-to-be-determined percentage of our gross, not just profit, to environmental organizations. In other words, the donations are part of the bottom line. We've decided that Coal River Mountain Watch will be the first environmental organization to receive donations. We recognize that the watch is even more important now that the coal companies are skedaddling, leaving us holding the bag. But look in the coming months for some donations to be coming your way from the company. All the best, Mark. And all the best to you, Mark. Thank you very, very kindly. It is, in fact, no getting around it, prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. It's Wednesday. Ever so much more than just hump day or downhill to Thursday. No. It's prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. And by Jove. I think we've got a dandy. By the way, word is already filtering down. Mark, you rock, says Carol. And when you've got a website for the when you've got a website for your new fashion line, do please let us know so that we can share it out and people can look and see and, hey, purchase. We don't do advertising here, per se, but when we have friends who are engaged in commerce and whose commerce we know we can trust and with an obvious philosophical intent such as Mark has manifested here, shucks, that ain't advertising. That's just sharing good news with neighbors, which is what this is. This is, after all, a neighborly conversation across the back fence. You know, that's the horn's all about. That's why we're a family commune congregation. It is, though, really and for truly. It is prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. And goodness me, well, we had ourselves a lovely little fellowship dinner. Apparently, one of the little old blue-haired ladies who works back in the fellowship hall kitchen heard one of the deacons talking about how couldn't nobody touch the wings that he was able to get at one of those little places that's halfway a stripper joint. And the little old blue-haired lady didn't appreciate that. One, she didn't appreciate our deacon being down there at such a heathenistic place. And secondly, little old blue-haired ladies in the fellowship hall kitchen do not appreciate at all anybody telling any one of them that they come in second to anybody's cooking anywhere. So lo and behold, here in the fellowship hall this evening, with August about a third of the way gone, wings. It's never happened before, but wings. Oh, I tell you what, little old blue-haired ladies were not to be outdone. Mercy sakes, anybody who knows how to make buttermilk biscuits like they do, and anybody who makes cornbread with buttermilk the way they do, my goodness gracious, the blue cheese dressing that went with those wings. Oh, Lord, ain't God good? Yes. So it was wings, and there were all the traditional accoutrements. There were celery strips, and they can't help themselves. There's got to be at least a salad or a Jell-O mold or something like that, and that was all just right there. And carrot cake on the dessert table with, goodness gracious me, homemade cream cheese icing, caramel sauce. Oh, there was raisins and walnuts inside the carrot cake. Oh, heavenly days. They set aside a piece for me because they know what the deacons do to a good cake. And the deacons have since wandered on up into the parking lot. They're out there right now smoking with the sinners. Yes, indeedy. But it has come time for prayer meeting to commence. And so it is that we've had to chase the deacons out of the parking lot, in through the vestibule, down past that bowl of 20-year-old desiccated butter mints, and right down here in front where they're holding the plates even as we speak, because what we're going to do, pursuant to Brother Mark's suggestion, we're going to try to get out front. Get right out front in fundraising this evening, and or the equipment fund, just designated if you want to go to the equipment fund, and pass the offertory plate. Now remember, with every head bowed and every eye closed, except the one you need to kind of keep squinted open to keep from getting cronked in the noggin with the offering plate when the deacon stands at your row here in the sanctuary, we will call Mr. PDQ Bach up to lead the Cathedral of Common Sense Symphony. Yes, indeed. The Monk's Aria from Hansel and Gretel and Ted and Alice by himself, PDQ Bach. Hit it, brother!
Et expecto resurrection. Et in unum dominos and checkers. Qui tollus peccata Monday morning. Mea culpa Kyrie Eleison. Soni toftet ala in Pompeii, dona nobis pacem cum wat mei, Agnus and her sister Doris Dei. Lord have mercy on my soul. Et in terra chicken pox romana, sic transit gloria manana, sanctus estis cifo veridiana, in flagrante delicto Svetlana. Lord have mercy on my soul. Credo in et most unum deum, caveat nabisco mausoleum.
What a time, brethren and sisters, what a time to be stricken. We were struck down with a warning that I've never seen from Winders 10. I've never seen it before, but brethren and sisters, we were struck down. And there I was, a-feeling all ritzy and classy-like. Oh, I was, I tell you. It ain't very often you get high church Latin here in the Cathedral of Common Sense. No siree. But we were struck down. Indeed, we were. And now we're just awaiting to find out what this confounded new operating demon-possessed system that it is wants from us this evening. Amen. I tell you, hallelujah, glory. What a way to begin prayer meeting Wednesday. I don't think we've ever we've never been quite this ritzy with the offertory hymn before. I mean, there's nothing like a little Latin and incense stenching to raise up an otherwise Protestant fellowship into the realms of respectability. We're gonna have to keep old Mr. PDQ Bach on the speed dial, I do believe. Ha! Glory! I'm telling you, brethren and sistren, I want you to get up out of your seat and onto your feet and come on out. Come on out from the pews and come on down that blood-red aisle and fall, I tell you, upon your knees at the altar. Ha! Amen. And lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through you from the server on high. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Bob Kincaid. Ha! And this here is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the horn. Amen and amen. Oh, brethren and sistren, I tell you, we have inspiring tales, inspiring accounts of faith in action for you this evening. Oh, we do. We have to start right here in the home state of the Cathedral of Common Sense. Yes, we do. Because another Christian, brethren and sistren, is being persecuted for his faith in our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen. Oh, the persecutions are coming fast and furious now. You know how it is. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We've all had, or many of us, those mornings when we wake up wishing we hadn't have done what we know we done did. Yes, we have. And brethren and sistren, nations are no different than people. No, they are not. Why? And you'll understand why I said we're starting here in West Virginia. This is not the West Virginia part, but this kind of explains the West Virginia part of the story that we'll be getting to. Ha! Glory! In a moment. Amen. Amen. We're gonna go over to Branson, Missouri for this here part. Branson, Missouri is the hideout now, the spider hole of a great Christian man. Of course, I'm talking about Jim Hope, Amen Baker. No kin, as far as we can tell, to Carol Baker or the fabulous Baker sisters. Not that they'd claim. But he had a guest on, now way back in the day when he was something famous and still married to Tammy Faye, and they had the puppets, and, well, they'd have all kinds of famous people on their PTL club, but he's not quite getting the same level of guest that he got way back then. So instead he had Rick Wiles on his program there. And Rick Wiles says that, well, we'll let Rick Wiles say it for himself. Uh-huh.
He said, America has turned her back on me. I turn my back on her. And I'm telling you right now, if you're going to be my spokesman, you turn your back right now. And so in front of that entire congregation, as they had their hands over their heart saying the Pledge of Allegiance, I had to turn and face the other side of the church. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there, standing there just trembling, but I knew I had to do this. But Jim, what the Lord showed me was, He said, America has dealt treacherously with me as a treacherous wife.
Yes.
As a treacherous wife. You got that? America is a treacherous wife to the Lord God Almighty of hosts. Not a treacherous husband, but a treacherous wife. For we all know that it is the women's what bear the sin of Eve and screwed the goose and kept us all from living eternal lives running around naked in the Garden of Eden. We could be there now if it wasn't for the women's. Absolutely. There he was, a-turning his back on the flag of his country and a refusing to pledge allegiance to the one nation under God. My God, can you imagine if a liberal did something like that? I remember when a basketball player did something like that during the national anthem, and they just about hauled out the Klan on him. You noticed that, did you, Marty? Marty with a question. Who's that having the background orgasm? Yeah, it's hard to tell. They all kind of get off on this stuff, but let's keep going. Because I want to hear about this treacherous wife that America has been. Don't you?
And he said, she once was beautiful and good. And then she began to commit adultery with other men. And I forgave her. And she did it again. And I forgave her. And she did it again. And I forgave her. And she did it again. And I forgave her.
When were we getting around like that? As a country. Because remember, this is all metaphor for America sleeping around, and America is a girl, and she's apparently just tripping men and getting to the ground before they do. Who were the men countries that we were adulterating with and fornicating philosophically and politically? Getting lost quick. You'll have that.
But now she's committing homosexual sex with another woman.
Oh, no! America's done gone all lesbian. Just as if she was right there in Beirut. Oh, it's shocking. I wonder what this is going to do to the background orgasm. Irish Dave with a question. Subject line, holy cream pie, is this a self-avowed cuck Christian? Is there a disclaimer in front of Jim Baker's show saying, for Christ's sakes, don't let your children hear this?
Mommy, who did America?
That's right. God forgave America for slutting around with other men's. But oh no, no. Now America has tasted the sapphic love that one dare not speak its name.
She did it again, and I forgave her, and she did it again, and I forgave her. But now she's committing homosexual sex with another woman. And I cannot look at her anymore. I can't. He told me, he said, I can't even look at her. She's not my wife anymore. And the divorce is final.
Well, then, she's not my wife anymore. She's lesbian. And did you hear that? The divorce is final.
He told me that on the day the U.S. Supreme Court ruled, God went to court too and he got a divorce.
Thanks to our good friends who have incredible fortitude. Over to the Right Wing Watch. Wowzer. You got that? What? It's kind of like that old joke about I built bridges. I built buildings. Did they call me? Never mind. You know the punchline. And as Marty notes, the divorce is final. Good for her. Good, you go, girlfriend. Although I'm sure if she was asked, she'd say she never touched that other girl country. No. So that's how it goes. You wake up in the morning sometimes and you realize you. Arthur in the chat room. I can't watch. Someone's standing in front of the window. No, I mean it. No, it's repugnant. But you wake up in the morning and you realize you've done something. You've done ought not to. And then you have to either hide it or learn to live with it. Mm-hmm. And that's where James Robert J.R. Smith found himself. It was last year when Charleston's own WCHS-TV reported on sexual abuse allegations of a young boy that WCHS-TV said was so nasty and graphic that they couldn't publish them. And he got arrested, James J.R. Smith did, on charges that he sexually abused a boy in the name of Jesus! Of course, because he's a pastor. He is a God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian with a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, but he also needed to have a personal relationship with a 10-year-old boy. I mean, that's when it started. It went on and on and on. It went till he was about 14. Mm-hmm. So he was charged, even there when he was a pastor at the Morning Star House of Prayer here in Almost Level West by Cole, Virginia. Stan, you want to bet he's a friend of Cole? I'll bet he is. Cole keeps the lights on. Until I turn them off because I'm having sex with a 10-year-old boy. Sometimes I leaves them on. But even though he was charged with having sex with a little boy beginning when he was 10 and going on for something on the order of 4 years... Five. Some circuit judge somewhere still set bond for him that he could actually make. Now, I got a question for you. Let's say you're a judge. No, I know you have more morals than that, don't you? But let's say you are a judge and James Robert J.R. Smith is brought before you on charges of child little boy rape that went on over a period of 5 years, you, the judge in the case, I mean, the man is entitled, according to constitutional law and state law here, the man is entitled to a reasonable bond. But reasonable is a complex term. Reasonable has to take into account ability to pay and the question of whether or not the guy might do it again or flee the state or evade justice. But you've got a case of a little boy being raped repeatedly by a preacher in a position of trust over the period of 5 years. What bond? How much would you set his bond at? No, Tim from L.A., you can't give him the death penalty. One, we don't have it in West Virginia, and you can't impose it until the trial's been done and there's been a jury and all of that. This is just the arraignment. This is just setting bond to guarantee his appearance at the trial. Okay, see, Tim from L.A. says $1 billion. A tenth of a billion would be $100 million, which is what you would have to pay in cash to the bondsman to get your sorry little boy raping self out of the stir. I think a court would probably strike that down. But $1 million? $2 million? How about $1 million for each count of kiddie rape? $10 million? How about $1 million for each year? $5 million? That would mean he would have to come up with $500,000 cash in order to get out of jail before trial. Well, I got to tell you, I don't know what bond was set for James Robert J.R. Smith. Carol's saying the bond would be zero because he's a Christian and they may have butt sex with little boys, but they don't lie. No, wait. Precisely. Whatever the bond was, James Robert J.R. Smith made it. Because, see, the way it works in West Virginia, and for all I know, in other states as well, if you've got somebody in the clink, in the sneezer, then the county, up until conviction, is on the hook for every day's housing of the prisoner. Now, while he's incarcerated, awaiting trial, he gets credit for time served, of course, most usually. But it's about $55 a day. Or more. And little old county commissioners in little old counties sit there and squeal like stuck pigs if somebody is incarcerated pre-trial on the county nickel. Because the county can't recoup that. That's just gone money. It's nothing to see little tiny counties in this state have as much as 50 or 75% of their annual budgets eaten up by jail costs. So somewhere along the line, this guy got admitted, he had a bond set for him, and the bond was probably low enough. Well, it was low enough that he was able to make it and walk out on a pretrial basis. Mm-hmm. The charge actually came from the county I live in. He lives in Boone County. The crime was thought to have occurred in both in Fayetteville, but it was also believed that other crimes may have occurred in Clendenin. This was a year ago. Now, of course, if you're a pastor, you want to have your congregation on your side. In this case, Janice Allen was interviewed by WCHS, and she said, "Ever since he's been here, there's been tales told on him. He's been confronted with it. Nobody can prove anything. It's even been said on him." Meanwhile, the 15-year-old boy reported that James Robert J.R. Smith, aged 23 last year, told the boy, "If you tell anybody, bad things will happen." Mm-hmm. When the story broke, one of James Robert J.R. Smith's family members screamed at the reporter and said, "If you ruin my brother's life, I will kill you." Dirty word. I can't tell you what the dirty word was because, well, dadgummit, they're not allowed to broadcast that sort of thing. Janice Allen was steadfast in her support for Brother Pat. 23 years old. How do you get to be a pastor at 23 years old? Well, in places like West Virginia and in rural Protestantism, all you have to say is that you've received the call. Did you notice how Rick Wiles, all that business he said about the divorce, that's something he said God told him. And I reiterate that religion, and this is further proof that the First Amendment is nothing more than a life support system for the religion industry. In any other walk of life, if you say that a little voice inside your head told you something or told you to do something or told you to say something, well, the next thing you know, you're having a visit with somebody who's going to give you some very nice medicine to hopefully make that voice stop talking to you. But because it's Christianity, and of course they're persecuted in America, right? Well, you can say God talks to you all the time. In fact, it made it into the it made it into the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda GOP circus last week, didn't it? Remember when not a journalist Megyn Kelly said, "Has God told you anything?" Yeah. It's perfectly acceptable to say this in a religious context. In any other, it is rank insanity. But Janice Allen said, "This is what happens to a man or woman who is a person of God, and you don't fool with God's people because it'll come back to haunt ye." Mm-hmm. Yeah, his congregation took the side of a rapist instead of a rape victim. His bond was set at $1.5 million. A 23-year-old boy from Boone County came up with $150,000 cash money to get out. And guess what? Because remember, this is a year-old story. He got out. And he continued to share the saving grace of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. and apparently was sharing that message in a very special way with a little boy in Indiana. No, really. He was arrested yesterday for molestation charges in a different state. I think it was Indiana. Yeah. Talibandiana. We got a lot of hillbillies light out of the hills and head for Indiana for some reason. I think it's because you get flat land, but a similar mindset. So on bond, awaiting trial on child rape charges in West Virginia, a magistrate let this man out, and he left the state. Usually, in bond cases, there's a prohibition on leaving the state. I mean, unless you're Don Blankenship. But no, he boogied, he bolted, he scampered off, and went, and apparently, did something awful to a little boy in Indiana. And so now, he's being held there, waiting for extradition back to West Virginia, because apparently he has no intention of waiving extradition. How many of these cases have we had coming out of rural Christianity in this country? And rural, quite often, by the way, is code for white. How many? Where the congregation says, only God can judge him, and we've talked to him, and we believe him when he says he didn't do it. And even if he did, the power of Jesus Christ has been able to forgive him. The grace of the blood shed on the cross has afforded him forgiveness. Hallelujah. And then you find out that the rapist has raped again. I mean, I can think of three or four of these in the last couple of years. If you're a regular listener and a member of the Horn Family Commune congregation, you probably can too, because they were featured right here on a prayer meeting Wednesday. Because there is apparently something gravely wrong inside Christianity in America insofar as it affords a safe haven for sexual predators. If you ruin his life, I kill you. This ain't Ernest T. Bass. This is real. By the way, back when the first rapes occurred, James Robert J.R. Smith was living with the boy and his family. And yes, there were multiple counties and multiple states in which these rapes allegedly took place. And, yeah, Gerald, you got it. Gerald says, so that's it. To be exonerated of any crime, all you have to do is claim you're a faithful Christian. Hell, sign me up. About what it comes down to, isn't it? Yeah, it looks like I'll be having a bleach shower after this is over. Hey, let's go back and, being as how it's prayer meeting Wednesday, let's go back and check in with Jim Baker again. Mm-hmm. Because, and he's a clever man. I just don't have the marketing skill. I don't. You know, I fire up the microphone every night and I say, listen, we've been at this for 10 years. If we want to be at this for another month, well, we need $200 a day. And I'm proud to say, thank you very kindly, that we are well started on our fundraising for this evening. Yes, indeed. I want to thank Brother Deacon Asa, who most Wednesdays is right there the very instant that the plate gets passed around. And got us going this evening. And thanks as well to another individual. I'm not sure if I should make this person anonymous or not, so I will. Between Brother Deacon Asa and Brother Sal and Brother Anonymous, we're at $180 for fundraising this evening, and that's magnificent. Thank you. Let's keep it rolling. I can't remember the last time we actually finished a whole week ahead of schedule. Is it possible we could get into next week? I don't know. It's not reliant upon a miracle. It's reliant upon you, because we know miracles don't happen. Unless people make them happen. That's how it is here in reality world. But no, I'm not as clever or as quick as Jim Baker. He's got a new hustle. Granted, he's had to scale things back a little bit. Once upon a time, he was raising money for Lear jets and water parks and water slides for Jesus. Not so much now. And hey, it's an opportunity to mix prayer meeting Wednesday with food porn. Why not?
Dear God. Okay, the soup comes in 6 gallons of this. It weighs almost 50 pounds. I know you don't want to hear this. But I want to tell you, you're going to dream Jim Baker on TV telling you, get ready. And you say, oh, my God, why didn't I order something?
Because, see, Jim Baker is now selling, I'm not kidding, 5 gallon buckets of potato soup. That's right. You can get for $160, dang, we've raised more than enough for me to order us a horn 5 gallon bucket of potato, Jim Baker potato soup. Hoo-wee! Of course, never mind the fact that, being a hillbilly and all, I can make 5 gallons of potato soup with about $10 worth of ingredients. Should we start a Kickstarter here at the Horn? And one of the premiums would be a 5 gallon bucket of Bob's Hearty potato soup. Carol noting, it's a different branch of the family, by the way, but she says, cousin Jimmy should shut up. The family photo I have of him on the mantle is the day they took him off to jail and he was blubbering like a little bitch. Well, there was that day. But he's all better now. because the rubes can buy potato soup from him. Arthur noting, the holiest potato soup on the market may contain cadmium and selenium. And selenium's a mineral, and that means it's good for you. Hey, it's got electrolytes! I don't know the answer, but by golly, I think there may be a co-marketing opportunity there, Marty. Marty wants to know, does the Jim Baker potato soup require water filtered through one of Alex Jones's water filtration system? Yeah. But it's heavy. It's heavy. It's not heavy. It's potato soup. Absolutely.
They're on TV telling you, get ready. And you say, oh, my God, why didn't I go and why didn't I order something? I'm going to eat some more of this if you're not careful.
And they're serving it up out of plastic buckets as well. And if you saw the way the camera panned across the audience in the room there, the rubes who thought that they were by God going in to see see Dolly Parton and Porter Wagoner, not realizing that they ain't in Branson and Porter's dead. And instead they got Jim Baker, and they're there in their galluses. Oh my God, this is it's like the crowd that goes to a county fair, okay, or a state fair. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about the kind that they do with Broadway production numbers with the pretty young girls in their gingham check dresses and stuff. No. I'm talking about the fellas in their wore out overalls, thin in the seat, and a big chaw red man in the side of their mouthuses. And yes. And Mama with her psyche knot up on her head, and this is their big day out for the year. Mm-hmm. If you're not careful, I'm going to have some more soup.
Oh. Hey. Oh, good. Oh my God.
What is there a little Was there a little bit of extra capsaicin in your taste there, Brother Jim? By the way, he was getting big slurps of it out of a great big aluminum ladle. I guess you can get those two for a dollar down at the Dollar Tree there in Branson, Missouri. And there sit the rubes in the room. I thought we done bought tickets to see the Bald Knobbers, Marveline. Shut up, Embry. We might get some soup.
You didn't have lunch, right? Wow. And then you have the potatoes soup, that heavy. And then we have bananas. We have the chocolate pudding for the...
Wait. Potato soup with chocolate and bananas? This is sounding kind of fusion-y, isn't it? Next thing you know, Jim Baker's going to be on the Food Network.
Dessert,
right?
We use it for we bake cakes. We got enough stuff to bake a cake now. And the bread, you can just put this on your bread. The bread is so sweet. You can add a little more sugar to that bread, and you got cake. You got a morning cake. I'll tell you that, a coffee cake. And you put that chocolate on top. You can have parties. When the world's coming apart, you still have a birthday party. And look at that, Lori.
Good old mac and cheese.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can have a party when the world's coming apart. Because, see, you can get the entire system for only $3,500. Because rural... evangelical fundamentalist Christians out there are Simon Simple and Simon Pure. Mm-hmm. Wrong business. You have a birthday party. But it's not the birthday parties Jim Baker's worried about. I mean, he's got potato soup, he's got macaroni and cheese, chocolate pudding, sweet bread. Mm-hmm. But it's not the birthday party when you're really going to want to be eating this stuff. No, no. Brother Jim knows when you're going to get hungry.
Our cycles with the sun. The sun has a 206-year cycle. We just came out of the global warming cycle. Mm-hmm. Food is abundant during the global warming cycle. Mm-hmm. Food is scarce during the 206-year global cooling cycle.
Wow.
And if you notice...
So I read an article earlier today explaining the differences between cannabis indica and cannabis sativa. And it said that everything may not be quite as you think it is. If you think there's simply... If you want the bouncy kind of high, you go with the sativa. And if you want the what they call the couch lock high, you go with the indica. No, because everything's been hybridized now. And it has something to do with a phenol or a polymer or something like that called myrcene, which is also present, by the way, in hops in beer. But anyway, I was reading all that, and I don't know. I'm guessing whoever this is off camera was into the indica last night. I mean, because first she was having the off screen orgasm, and now she's just. Wow.
And 6-year global cooling cycle.
Wow.
And if you notice, the last several years, winters have been very, very cold, mm-hmm. very snowy, record snowfalls
yes.
in the East Coast, oh, yeah. New England, and mm-hmm. Michigan, and so forth. The Great Lakes frozen, you know, solid up through late spring.
Right.
These are signs that the sun is cooling down.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians are very adamant about this. The head of the Russian International Space Station, the section of the Russian side of it, mm-hmm. he is flat out saying, and he was saying this 7 years ago, the little ice age will start in the winter of 2015.
Really? Oh.
And it's on record. You can go on the internet and find these predictions. Well, why are the Russians so interested in it?
Wait a minute. I thought we used to couldn't trust the Russians. Well, but now they've got a bare-chested Russian leader, and he don't like the homosexuals no better than they do. So suddenly we can take them at their word. They're no longer inscrutable lying commies who are trying to lure us to our doom by getting us to eat too much potato soup.
Well, look at where their landmass is at.
Yeah.
Okay, if they lose their food, they're in trouble.
Sure.
Jim, what do nations do when the food runs out?
Do tell us, Jim. I'm sitting here with bated breath. It smells like potato soup, as a matter of fact. No, actually, wings. I mean, but never. Oh, I tell you what. What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet? They're back there in the back of the sanctuary. Little old blue-haired ladies. I see them looking at each other. Potato soup, you got that? Mac and cheese, potato soup, a little chocolate pudding. Oh, I think we got the menu for next week, Brother Bob. I bet you we do.
They go to war.
They go to war.
They have steal to it find... from each other just like they will.
Yes.
Just like
she. Wait a minute. She's like the character from Galaxy Quest. Now wait a minute. All I ever do is get to repeat what the computer says. Yeah. Oh. They go to war. They go to war. It is. It's a cross between Galaxy Quest and Homer Simpson. War. Yes, Jesus. This is crapture comfort food. Well, apparently, Gerald is off looking up the number. He says, "Why, that's a bargain at twice the price." But wait, there's more. If you order a if you order a 60-pound bucket of potato soup, by the way, it's in a bit. How's it going to? How long is it? Because remember, you're not supposed to just buy one bucket of potato soup. You want to buy a whole basement full of potato soup, because what Brother Jim is doing here is he's trying to tap into the preppers and the rapturists and the gun fanatics all at the same time. I mean, as the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, would say, that's a good dollar. But I didn't hear anything about how long your potato soup's going to last. What's the sell-by date on apocalypse food? Because I don't think this was a 5-gallon bucket of just dry soup mix. It didn't seem to, maybe it was. I guess I got to start watching, don't I?
Like New York, Chicago, all your big cities will be hell. The gangs will take what they want. They will kill to take what they want. And then they will start eating bodies of the people they kill.
Zombies. Oh, glory. Oh. And you can keep them from eating you by offering them a hot, hot bowl of potato soup. And of course, even though global climate change is not real, God's gonna cool the planet down to punish the whole planet, because he's a loving God who loves you so much he wants to torture you. He's gonna punish the whole planet for a little handful of Homer sectionals. Mm-hmm. See how it works? Ain't God good? Oh yes, absolutely. Oh dear, I think they've gotten Tim. Here's the product description for only $1,920. You know, that's only $192 by 10 people, or 10 people at $19.20. We might be able to raise enough this evening to, and we can set it aside for the big horn in when we have the big national horn party, and everybody can have some Jim Baker soup. With this special offer, you will receive 12 creamy potato soup mix buckets and a bonus of one creamy potato soup mix bucket. Oh, it is a mix. Okay, I got that. And you know what, that since it's 5 gallons, how much mix do you want to reckon's in the bottom of that 5-gallon bucket? 4 cups, tops, dry mix? Creamy potato soup mix is made from quality ingredients and full-flavored broth. It's Soylent Green as people! It's definitely a palate pleaser and a quick, hearty meal anytime. Nothing is as satisfying as a hot bowl of savory soup on a cold day. It can be easily personalized and will certainly become a family favorite during the Apocarev. 20-year shelf life, 4,199 servings, easy to use. Just add water. Recipes on label. No refrigeration needed for emergency food storage, camping, or everyday use, and non-GMO. Sealed or opened. From sealed to opened. 1-year shelf life. Best when stored in a cool, dry place at temperatures between 55 degrees Fahrenheit and 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Ideal humidity 15%. Tim says, 20-year shelf life? Is that normal? Was the soup hermetically sealed in a clean room at MIT? Sure, it's GMO-free, but the only thing I know that wouldn't go rotten so fast is a McDonald's hamburger. That's true. McDonald's hamburger, you can leave it out in broad daylight and night, and it's still going to be a cheeseburger a year from now. It's got a longer half-life. A McDonald's cheeseburger has a longer half-life than U-238. So there you go. Hungry yet? Yeah. Now, see, Steve, you gotta be here from the beginning. Steve, email. I just tuned in. What the eating bodies? Well, yeah. If you don't order your Jim Baker soup mix, then you won't be able to offer a hot bowl of soup when the inner city people, that's code word for Negroes, you know, go all zombie apocalypse when the great starvation comes and they're knocking down your door there in middle America and they're gonna eat your brains if you don't have soup to give them, damn it! Jeremy in Vermont noting, oh my, nearly referenced the OG story of the Walking Dead Jeebus. Zombies and brain eating! Carol says, I want the nanners and chocolate pudding in a bucket. Jesus will keep it as fresh as an Alabama virgin. No, wait. It has a 20-year shelf life. That shit's made of Twinkies. Oh. Are y'all better now, Steve? Steve says, whew, thanks for clearing that up. Well, I wouldn't feel so good. You're there in the inner city. You're going to be one of the people coming out eating brains instead of soup. If you don't get it first. Mercy. Well, by Jove, we just reached tomorrow's fundraising goal. Thank you very kindly, Cameron. That is much appreciated. We got 2 hours of the program left. Can we get to Friday too? Is that even possible? We can only wait and see. I got to take a break, though, because I'm kind of hungry. All this talk of potato soup after... Well, I think I need a snack. I mean, I got my wings, but somehow... Potato... And even though it's... I'm not one of those people that only eats soup in cold weather. I like soup anytime. And potato soup, oh, the way my mother made potato soup. Golly, Moses. I'm feeling right peckish. Oh, well. Let's take a break. And we'll come back. And, hey, you want to stand up and holler hallelujah or anything from out there in the congregation? You're welcome to. You know the numbers, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN. That's the stress line named after the inimitable Bill Mr. Stress Miller. 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. This is listener-supported conversation radio.
Calling Paris. Come in, London. Come in, New York. Hello, Rio. Bad news is the world is ending. The good news is there's a party, but you better get here quick.
When you feel like a written off factor on Deadwood, about to get fed to the pigs. When that creature's bust from hell, blasting just cowbell, parks itself in front of your dig. There's a place you can go called Tierra del Fuego. Down in the southern hemisphere, it's kind of Troy without Helen past the Straits of Magellan. And things are always looking up down here. Cause there's a party at the end of the world.
End of the world.
Where the locals do the tango twirl. Forget the temples in Nepal, cancel the Fed in Montreal. There's a party at the end of the world. Well, it seems like I've run out of reasons to be here, so I'm just gonna steal from myself.
If your attitude's appalling, there's a latitude that's calling. Get yourself past that continental shelf. Now the band that we hired is playing quite inspired, singing Eskimos and eunuchs from Bangkok. And the location's so nice, we'll never run out of ice, 'cause Antarctica is just around the block. There's a party at the end of the world, where the locals do that tango twirl. Now don't make that big mistake and wind up with Miss Jamaica. There's a party at the end of the world. Flying machines, yellow submarines, French girls and cowboy decor, decor. RSVP is the needed, you see, and they'll all just be screaming for more. I'm more, I'm more. In case you haven't heard, things are getting quite absurd. Nothing really shocks us, that's for sure. Roadside bombers and tsunamis, oh God, how I miss those commies. No one seems to play fair anymore. But I've spoken to the yogis, had some meetings with my roadies, who assure me the arrangements are complete. Just below the roaring 40s, I am gonna fly some sorties. You'd best arrange that cherished window seat. To the party at the end of the world,
end of the world,
where the locals do the tango twirl. I don't care about the rapture when there's native girls to capture. There's a party at the end of the world. Who cares if there's no fire? We'll be rocking in a schwire. That's a party at the end. You sure to must attend the party at the end of the world.
You know it. Absolutely. And there'll be potato soup. It was a tough call. I was... Hi, I'm Bob. It's hour two of this here prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And I was torn there, given what we had earlier from Rick Wiles about that tramp America, which was sleeping with all kinds of men countries, and then all of a sudden took to sleeping with the women's countries. Well, that offered up an opportunity for John Prine's The Great Compromise. But I decided to go with something a little more upbeat. I hope you didn't mind. It really is. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And since we're going to go ahead and work the food porn angle, Carol, being a Midwestern Iowa stand girl, she says, my potato soup is made with cheddar and bacon, and it must be consumed immediately. Made with taters, cheddar, cream, and pig strips with diced veggies and onions. I'm a giver. The real kind. Oh, I think I could probably sit down to a great big about quart-sized bowl of that. I don't know. I think we've got the beginnings of a philosophical debate. I said, does it come with a side of cornbread? She said, I'm a Yankee. We don't serve it with cornbread. I serve it with fresh home-baked braided loaves. Baked. Home-baked braided loaves. That was a little difficult to enunciate, for me at least. Must be the hunger pangs. I could live with that. It's just, I grew up with cornbread. Cornbread and potato soup. Mercy. But who's going to argue with fresh baked braided loaves? Nope, can't say it. Well, while we're, you remember the sort of icky story that upon which we centered for this prayer meeting Wednesday. You remember, don't you, Arkansas State Representative Justin Harris and his upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian wife? Remember, they adopted some little girls, and then they decided they saw demons in them. And so they dumped them in another home. They called that rehoming, with not so much as a kiss my butt to the state who had placed them in their care, custody, and control, at which point the little girls were re-raped. Yeah. Speaking of these folks, our dear friend Jude up in the Great Northwest says, dirty lying SOBs, all of them. I was with an organization in the early 70s that assisted parents who had been charged with child abuse by the courts. There were the calls in the middle of the night from a mother screaming at the top of her lungs at a toddler who could be heard crying in the background. And finding myself driving there, it took forever, almost panicking at times for the safety of just one vulnerable and broken child out of so many. It's chilling to revisit that time period, Bob, and then to know these sociopathic dominionists are walking free. And they are. They are. Because it turns out, not only was there no punishment for Arkansas State Senator Justin Harris, who received considerable taxpayer largesse for running a preschool for other little evangelical fundamentalists' children. Now, he's going to get a cookie. Well, no, not a cookie. They're going to get an award. This very evening, in Arkansas, they're having a dinner. They're having a dinner for that paragon of virtue and faith, Canadian style. Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future King of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz. And originally, the Family Council Action Committee, I get them mixed up with the Family Action Council Committee and the Committee on Family Council Action, split us. Well, they were going to give a Power of Courage Award to Representative Harris this evening. Sitting right there next to God's own anointed future King of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz of Canada. Hey, look, Canadians, I'm sorry. He's yours, not ours. Do I ever try to palm off screw-ups from down here on y'all? No. He's yours. Well, it turns out there was a bit of a kerfuffle over representing Harris getting his Power of Courage Award this evening, sitting right next to God's own anointed future King of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz. It didn't look good on Ted Cruz. So they're not going to present them with the Power of Courage Award. To representing Charlene Feit of Van Buren, Arkansas, and Justin Harris of West Fork. In a previous press release, the Family Council Action, in a previous press release, they said Harris, who dumped a little child sexual abuse victim that they had adopted on somebody who went and re-raped her. Yeah. Man, that just turns my stomach every time I do. The Family Action Council Committee said representing Harris, demonstrated courage by standing strong in faith when situations were tough at the state capitol, and they did so with grace. They are consistently models of their Christian values in their homes and their communities and in their churches. They say all this because they've made a bunch of noises about the poor little suffering fetuses. Well, now, the satanic power of old Scratch himself has been felt. Because they're not going to get their award representing Fight and representing Harris. They're not going to get their award for consistently being models of Christian values. They're not going to get them tonight. They're going to get their awards, but it'll be at a later date in a venue of their choosing, and preferably one that isn't a manifest embarrassment to anointed future King of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz. Because, see, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future King of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, has been getting some grief for sitting down and breaking bread with a guy who dumped his adopted daughter on somebody who went and raped her. It's not looking, the optics, as the professional political advisors say, the optics aren't good on this. Mm-hmm. And so I tend to concur. I tend to concur with Jude when she refers to them as dirty, lying SOBs. All of them. No damn doubt. But when a member of the clergy gets something right, especially on prayer meeting Wednesday, I think we have an obligation to take note of that. And I refer you, therefore, to the Reverend John Richard Bryant. He is the senior bishop of the entire African Methodist Episcopal Church. He was speaking today at the National Press Club in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. And he touched on an issue that we sort of touched on last night. In fact, specifically, I think it was during my conversation with our dear friend, the Angry Indian. That issue being, to wit, if all these oath keepers are going to walk around just waiting for an opportunity to shoot a person of color, why should not the community of color then respond by gunning up in its own right? And let this country be just one great daggum big okay corral. Well, let's check in with Senior Bishop John Richard Bryant. Might learn something. Because, you know, him being a preacher and everything, there is that little bit there in the Gospels where it says where Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi himself, says, put up thy sword, for those who live by the sword shall die by the sword. And I think he said sword only because they didn't have Freedom Protector guns back then. I don't think he would have a different opinion of guns. So let's check in with Bishop Brian.
I see. And came where you are and hit you in the head with a hammer. Would it be proper for me to tell you how to say ouch? What ought to be scary? And that's what I tried to say this morning. There is a large group of people who are suffering. 1 in 4 in the criminal justice system. Outlandish numbers. Unemployed, can't find a job. Then to add insult to injury, those who have jobs and are still poor because the jobs pay so little. And this is the crowd that has erupted. And we want to sanitize them. We really, we need to try to run in front of it and give it shape. And this that we think can take that movement further down the road. But right now, we're playing catch up. They've come to the streets out of frustration. And what they've said to us is that we've heard what you've said, and we've tried it. And when we can see people gunned down and catch it on film, in living color you see it, and then have that dismissed, we're still angry. And so the way they respond may not be the way we responded years ago when we were taken through workshops and what have you, we've got to catch up to that. But right now, across this country, there is a deep, deep feeling of frustration in the souls of people who feel that in this culture, in this society, their lives matter. And so they're saying, hey, look at me, I'm a man, I'm a woman. I have needs like you do. And we've got to run behind them, clean it up, calm them down. But it's the response of the human soul that's been pent up and ignored.
Mentioned racism and got questions about racism. While the Confederate flag, rebel flag no longer flies on the South Carolina Capitol grounds, what needs to be done to change the racist conditions that created an unapologetic killer like Mr. Roof? And another questioner along similar lines says, it's a very good and important thing to take down a symbol of racism such as the Confederate flag at the State House. How do you take down the racism in people's hearts and minds?
And that's where we need our white brothers and sisters of goodwill. A lot is said in our absence that can be corrected.
Testify. That that may be the understatement of the evening. A lot is said in our absence that can be corrected. And I think I've referred to that myself. Have I not? White folks will assume that other white folks feel just like they do. And consequently, they'll use those words that, you know, they're not supposed to use in public, but they'll use it when they think it's safe. And they'll talk about those people and thugs. And you know what? It does take no small amount of courage to look at someone who does that and say, I can't believe you just said that. I can't believe that's what's in your heart. But you have just compelled me to believe it. And then to turn your back and walk away. Or to say, I want nothing to do with this kind of talk. Or that is vile. And this is a dangerous country now, because there's a possibility that that worst white person to whom you say that is going to have a hidden firearm and might kill your white ass for saying it. Because this is America. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Mm-hmm. Let's see where the bishop goes with it.
I live in Chicago, and I was at a demonstration at the tower, and it was about 50-50 black and white. And the white kids turned around and started shouting at the police, and I'm telling them the police what they was going to do. And telling the police where they could go. I never turned around. I kept. I kept my face front. Cause they won't get killed. Another brave young man I saw on the news who saw the police with his foot on the neck and brutalizing an individual. He couldn't take it, and he tackled the police. Do you know the miracle? He didn't die. He tackled the police, and he didn't die. So I'm praying that as our brothers and sisters of goodwill see what's going on and speak out and vote out.
Amen.
And stand up. It will help us, because the kind of racism I'm talking about, as King said, it can't be legislated.
Right.
It's a matter of the heart.
Yes.
The kind of deposits that were made in that young man's life that birthed that level of hatred. That's deep. Now, we have our work to do. I'm talking about the African-American community. Because if you're treated like you're nothing long enough, you'll act like you're nothing. And in like manner, we've got to take care of that. We've got to do that job with sowing into the hearts and spirits of our people self-worth. Even when everything around you tells you you're no good and you have no destiny, it's up to us to give them another message.
Powerful. It goes on for several more minutes. This video does. This audio does. And his words are moving. He referred to America as a country that is armed to the teeth and killing each other left and right. And that that being armed to the teeth doesn't work. He was asked one question about LGBT rights. He dodged it. That remains a problem in the what is monolithically referred to as the black church. But he advises that we listen to Black Lives Matter, the activists. You know what? I agree. And as we listen, I think we need to observe carefully. For instance, well, I almost hate to bring him up, but how about T-Rump? Because we've asked the question, I think we asked it last night. Angry and I did. What would happen if instead of assaulting an ally like Bernie Sanders, the activists went after, say, one of the GOP candidates for president who honestly doesn't give a good old-fashioned tinker's damn about black lives or any lives except their own and those that it takes to afford them power? Well, it just so happens there's an answer to that question. We asked it last night. The answer came today. I give you Donald Trump.
I would never give up my microphone. I thought that was disgusting. That showed such weakness. The way he was taken away by two young women, the microphone, they just took the whole place over. And the audience, which liked him, I mean, they were him. They're saying, what's going on? How can this happen? That will never happen with me. I don't know if I'll do the fighting myself or if other people will. But that was a disgrace. The way they took, I felt badly for him. But it showed that he's weak. You know what? He's getting the biggest crowds, and I'm getting the biggest crowds. We're the two getting the crowds. But believe me, that's not going to happen to Trump.
Yeah. That's not going to happen to Trump. Further into his remarks, he said, that would never happen with me. I don't know if I'll do the fighting myself or other people will, but that was a disgrace. Because, you know, Donald Trump would happily punch a young black woman right in the face, beat the snot out of her, give her the good stomping that she needed for getting out of her place and being, you know, uppity. But this is a classic moment. This is a perfect depiction of the difference between us and them. The right wing makes no, because they're essentially fascist, because they are fascist, they have no problem saying we will use brutal force to get our way. What did Bernie do? Bernie stepped back and went and started saying hello to some of the thousands and thousands and thousands of people who had come out to see him. No skin off his nose. And by the way, this story isn't getting nearly the coverage as any as something that Donald Trump has said about a white woman. This man actually said, I don't know if I'd be hurting him, but somebody'd hurt him. I don't know if I'll do the fighting myself or other people will. Where's the great screaming headline in the for-profit media, Donald Trump says he would hurt women if they tried to interrupt him? Because those were women who interrupted Bernie Sanders. Where's the headline? Why isn't that all over creation? Where's Megyn Kelly? Is she going to have this evening on that program where she complains that she does good journalism? Is she going to have a story saying Donald Trump says he would punch black women? I wouldn't put so much as a $5 bill on it. Because Fox News TV Radio Rwanda will not allow such a thing to be said or such a thing to happen. You know, for all intents and purposes, Fox News threw Megyn Kelly under the bus. And given the odious, noxious, and hateful things she said in the past, I'd rather hope she enjoys The View. She didn't turn around and chide all the pasty-faced, doughy white people who laughed and laughed when she talked about Trump calling Rosie O'Donnell a pig and a dog. She didn't wag her finger at them. She just cruised coolly right along. Yep. Because it's all about Megan. On the other hand, however, there's the Nuge. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it must be like. I don't. I live in my, you know, privilege is a thing that is in and of one, and it's really hard to step outside it. One has to make our buddy Michael in Madison was observing this earlier today. It's really hard to step outside one's own privilege. So as a white male, I can honestly say I don't know what it must feel like. Because I'm pretty sure I've never been lusted after. I don't know what it must feel like to be a woman and just feel eyes drilling through you. You know, the old colloquialism, being undressed with someone's eyes. But I think it's got to be gross. And so now, she gets to deal with this.
Something that makes me want to touch on it, and that is tears of blood. What are your thoughts about Donald Trump, Megyn Kelly, all of this whole, there is just so much going on right now.
Well, I'm a big fan of Donald Trump because I believe in bold, aggressive, unapologetic truth, period. And I'm not a fan of Megyn Kelly, though I often turn on Fox just to look at her. Sometimes when I'm loading my magazines, I like to just look at her.
See, this is one of those, it's not always white folks and black folks what the bishop was talking about there. Sometimes it's male versus female. Sometimes it's things that guys say to one another that they would not dare say in front of a woman, their mom, their wife, their daughter, their next door neighbor. This is Nugent talking to WIBX AM's Bill Keeler. Bill Keeler in the, I don't know, morning, noon, night, who gives a damn? And so he says, sometimes when I'm loading my magazines, I just like to look at her. Wow, if you say that even marginally differently, it comes out really, really differently, doesn't it? Sometimes when I'm loading my magazines, I like to look at her. Ted Nugent, in a desperate attempt to gin up publicity, because he can't get any publicity for his music anymore. Ted Nugent said that apparently, I mean, isn't he saying there that he has homicidal fantasies about Megyn Kelly while putting bullets in the magazines for his many, 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 many firearms? Isn't that what he said? And Will Bixler, or whatever his name is, just as Megyn Kelly didn't with the dog, pig, whatever remarks when the Republicans laughed, Will Bixler just laughs.
Look at her.
Because he's afraid of Ted Nugent.
It is a good view.
Sometimes when I'm loading my magazines, I like to just look at her. And I usually sit naked on the couch, dropping hot brass on my stuff. Anyhow, I digress, because I am funnier than Richard Pryor's afro on fire. That being said,
yeah.
Wow, this is, I mean, come for the misogyny, stay for the racism. Funnier than Richard Pryor's afro being on fire. Because you know what? That's what's really funny, when somebody's hair catches on fire. But it's especially funny when a black person's hair catches on fire. Oh, my goodness gracious, that is a knee slapper, Mr. Nugent. Well, ha, 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 ha. Oh, okay, so maybe he's not thinking about killing Megyn Kelly. He's saying that, oh. Well, that's even grosser. Carol tells me that, no, Bob, he's saying that Megyn Kelly and guns make his withered old member jump like a snake in a microwave. And by the way, as to remarks made or leering glances, Carol says, makes you feel cheap. It makes you feel objectified. It doesn't ever make you feel human. No. I can well imagine. Well, I can only imagine. I'm a guy. I can try to empathize, I can try to sympathize, but I've never experienced it, and because of my gender privilege, I probably never will. If I was ever an object of lust, well, that ship has sailed, and nobody really said much about it. Because, see, women aren't encouraged to say that to men the way men are encouraged or expected to behave that way toward women. This is a classic case of the subtle inequities that run through our culture and through many others. God knows.
Yes.
That being said, I'm afraid the gorgeous, stunning, otherwise professional and tuned in Megyn Kelly absolutely fell off the cliff of political correctness when she proposed that obnoxious, meaningless, nonsensical, biased question for Donald Trump that did nothing to further the quality of politics. And boy, there's two words that never belong together.
Yeah.
Like you and microphone, Ted. Actually, whether a candidate has overt misogynistic tendencies rather is important within the political process, because a president does, after all, have to be president of all the people, not just the ones with penises. Yeah. Yeah, there's more. I'm going to leave that alone. Well, it's not often we get two nights in a row with the angry Indian. Hey, Angry. Uh-oh. Well, we're trying to connect to the angry Indian. Are you there, angry?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I just wanted to say something quick, man. Ted Nugent is a fucking pig. He's a pig.
Well, is there a debate?
Yeah, obviously there's a debate because people still give this fucker airtime. He still shows up at these NRA rallies. They still have him on Fox.
Well, hell, he's an NRA officer, isn't he?
I don't know. He might be. He might as well fucking be.
I'm pretty sure he's an exalted because they open up when Charlton Heston went down to be basted for all eternity in hell.
Hmm. Yeah, we remember how that went when they insisted on having that rally after that tragedy. Yeah, well, look, we've talked about this. We're not going to go into it, but we've talked about this before. You know, racism, when it gets to that extreme, when you're looking at, the far right in their glory, they don't like white women any more than they like any other minority. All right. So Megyn Kelly is used to it. She's like Sarah Palin. She's used to being slapped around verbally, maybe even physically by these guys.
Because after all, they all subscribe to a religion that says women are to submit themselves to men. And you know, that's not a Christianity problem. That's a monotheism problem. That's a Muslim problem. It's a Judaism problem. I mean, don't Orthodox Jews get up every morning and pray, thank God I was not born a woman?
That's one of them, yeah. That's one of them. You know, it's accepted, right? So if you're going to really pump this whole Bible thing and include stoning children at the gates of the city and chopping off a woman's hand if her husband is wrestling with another man and she grabs the family jewels of the other guy to defend her husband, we'll chop off her hand and show no mercy, right? So, you know, I mean, if they really want to go this far, how are they any goddamn different than the Islamic State, Daesh, ISIL, whatever the fuck you want to call them?
My point exactly. I think if you sat them down to toast and tea, they'd probably find out they have more in common than they have separating them, and then we'd really be screwed.
Well, we are already screwed, because when Al-Qaeda was called Al-Qaeda here in the press, if you go around, Google it, whatever search engine you use, you'll find out that the FBI had at least three major cases where they caught Klansmen and other white supremacists, you know, members of the Patriot Party and what have you, the militias, like the Hutari group, you know, bullshit like that, that they were trying to hook up with Al-Qaeda so that they could basically rep Al-Qaeda in the U.S. So, you know, this is not a secret. And if you look at a lot of those websites, they don't really have a problem with the extremists. And if you want to go even deeper and look at the European press, especially between 1984 and like 2008, and I'm kind of throwing those years out, but that's when I became aware of it, that French neo-Nazis were going to Islamic terrorist training centers in North Africa, right, to get trained because they both don't like Jews. So they both are fighting against the state of Israel. So they say, okay, well, we can drop our bullshit for a while because really we didn't really fuck with you during the war. You were kind of helping us out, right? So, you know, we both don't like Jews. So, you know, why don't we get together and we both go after these motherfuckers. We'll train together. We'll do a couple operations together. The European intelligence circles understand this. Americans don't understand this. You know, or don't want to. And when you start looking at Ted Nugent and what we were talking about with the Oath Keepers showing up and the police not doing anything to them, but they're arresting and intimidating, you know, these protesters with Black Lives Matter. And, you know, I would think Bernie Sanders would be against that. But, you know, anyway, the fact that he's being allowed to do that, and they were allowed to do that, somebody's making a move here, be it the Koch brothers. You know, we've had a couple of really, you know, serious, you know, attempts here with fascism a few times. So why would this be any different? You know, why would this be any different?
Right. Yeah. And by the way, Carol and Jack and a couple of others let me know Ted Nugent is on the board of directors of the NRA.
He's on the board of directors. So, yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, doesn't that just speak volumes for them?
Well, it's volumes of hypocrisy. You know, I'm going to say this because my fucking father went in, as a black man, went into the fucking United States goddamn Navy and was treated badly the entire fucking time he was in there. And I'm going to say something else because he tried twice to get into the fucking UDT, what is now the SEAL teams. He was an excellent motherfucking swimmer. They wouldn't let him fucking do it. They did everything possible on his goddamn exams to keep him from going in. Now, I did have someone that, you know, that fucking supposedly did get in. But, you know, but this is a lot of bullshit. That motherfucker never served. He goddamn admitted that he didn't bathe for a week, that he didn't wipe his fucking ass for a week, that he didn't brush his fucking teeth for a week. He threw up on himself, stuck his finger down his goddamn throat, went in there dirty so that they would think he was insane and make him fucking 4F. Fuck him. I still got my goddamn selective service card in my motherfucking wallet. They fucking called me, even though I don't agree with this goddamn shit. I might have been an objective fucking, you know, observer, but I would have goddamn went. Fuck him. Ted Nugent is a fucking punk. And I'm saying that because he runs around talking all this macho shit. He's a hunter. He sells jerky. He runs around with a lot of weapons. He does set a terrible guy, even though Megyn Kelly is a fool. To say what he fucking said about her while he's loading his magazines, that is the most sexist goddamn shit I've ever fucking heard. I have a goddamn wife, man. I don't want anybody fucking running around and thinks like that. Fuck Ted Nugent. He's a fucking freak.
And that's the whole point. I mean, whether it's Trump saying that he would gladly, you know, punch out a black woman, or Ted Nugent saying that he likes to masturbate to Megyn Kelly. You, and, you know, it's kind of your job, you're outraged. You're insulted. You're pissed right the hell off. But where's the statement from Rents Priebus, chairman of the GOP? And like I said earlier, where's Megyn Kelly saying, well, I guess we've learned all about Trump we need to know. He says he'd like to punch some black women in the face.
Hey, you know, I can talk a whole lot of shit. Where's Barbara Walters saying, wait a motherfucking minute. This is bullshit. There's a ton of women in broadcasting, regardless if they support the GOP or not, that should be like, wait a fucking minute. We let Trump get away. We're saying that, you know, if you ask me a tough question, you must be on the fucking rag. Right? So now, if these two fucking, you know, black broads show up and try to take the mic from me, it's going to get motherfucking violent. Now, see, if a black man said that shit, he'd be in fucking trouble. And I know somebody's justifying what Trump is saying because of the way fucking Kanye West acted like a fucking fool. Well, what was it, Taylor Swift, whoever the fuck she was?
Oh, please.
Hey, there's white people that are still mad with the entire black community about that. Oh, look at what he did.
Time. Wait a minute. The entire black community is now responsible for Kanye West?
The entire black community is responsible for Tupac Shakur. The entire black community is responsible for Biggie Smalls. The entire fucking black community is responsible for Ice-T when he put out Cop Killer. Fuck yeah.
Lindbergh baby, anyone?
Well, hey, you know, that was what? I mean, how many Germans got stomped on the East Coast because of that? And most of the Midwest because of that, right? We're living in a time of freakouts. It's just like when the Pujadas, Pierre Pujade, you know, those motherfuckers are running around in France. You know, they wanted to get rid of McDonald's and they wanted to get all of the American stuff out. You know, he was marketed as a populist, but he was a fucking fascist. And they were talking about, you know, kids were missing because, you know, Jews were collecting, you know, they were killing young French girls who were purely white and purely French. They had the blood of Joan of Arc, so they had to get their blood to make Passover bread. And you know, people were buying this bullshit up until the mid-goddamn 80s, even though nobody's missing. And then you remember in the 80s in this country, you had the fucking satanic panic. Nothing happened. Nothing was going on. I mean, there were some freaks that were using Satanism, you know, for like psychodrama or some shit. But they made it sound that, or made it out that there was this big goddamn conspiracy going on that had police involved and federal, you know, people involved. And it turned out to be a goddamn nothing. Because the moral majority here, led by Jerry Falwell, and thank know, whatever powers there are in the universe that he is not here any goddamn more. That motherfucker started the satanic panic.
No. Jerry Falwell and Oral Roberts are down in hell sodomizing each other.
Well, I don't know. I'm native. It's hard to really fuck with Oral Roberts, even though I remember that. How much was it that he needed, or Satan was going to come get him?
Oh, no. God was going to call him home. Satan wasn't going to take him. God was. God loved him.
Yeah, but the story I got was that his wife had taken their family Bible and in the living room and beat Satan off of him, who was choking the life out of him.
Well, she may have thought she was beating Satan off, but I think it might have been some rent boy.
Well, hey, he got more than twice what he asked for, and a lot of that was Indian money.
But I mean,
some of it my mama's money.
But I mean, it's like what Bishop Bryant said there. You know, there are conversations that white allies need to be having with other white people. And it ain't an easy thing to do, but once you've done it once, doing it the second time becomes easier. But don't we need to be careful, Angry, when we say that, you know, white people, you know, generally are mad at Kanye? I mean, don't we play into the same problem when we do that?
Well, yeah and no. But again, I'm being general, but I'm being general with intelligence. You know, I'm generalizing with intelligence. The people who are still upset and, you know, have this idea that if you give a black guy 5 cents more than a white man is getting, yeah, they're still mad with Kanye West because that's something that they can focus on. It's not that it means any fucking thing. It's something to focus on. You still have people who are complaining about the film White Chicks, which I've never seen, where they like did the reverse of blackface. But the point is, if you're 20 some odd years old or 17, you don't remember blackface and what that means. You don't, because they don't teach about it in school unless you're at the college level. So you don't understand what the reverse of that was supposed to be. Now, the film looks stupid to me in the general. But there are white people who will cite that as, you know, the white genocide. This is hate on white people. And there are people, well, matter of fact, I think I sent you the information on this. The Daily Stormer, dailystormer.com is one of the neo-Nazi sites that I suggest to people keep an eye on. They have officially endorsed Donald Trump for president. It's right on their website.
Oh,
and
no.
I sent them through their Twitter account. Have you denounced this yet? Have you rescinded this endorsement? They have not. Because he represents the white genocide. The white women are trying to take away the balls of white men. They don't want them to have guns. They don't want to give them sex when they want it, right? You know, they want them to, do half of the household chores. They don't want to have to deal with this shit. And then you got the blacks coming. Then you got the Mexicans.
Oh, wait. We're going to go down the castrating women road?
Look at the men's movement.
Yeah, I guess that's still out there, too.
The men's movement, you know, people are like, I'm surprised you don't support the men's movement. I'm like, what are you defining as the men's movement? And then they'll point a website out to me or two, and I'm like, look, man, really read this shit. Forget about the fact that you're having problems with your ex right now, you know, and look at the fact that these guys are not motherfucking talking about fairness. You know, they're talking about, well, men should basically be on motherfucking top. And the fact that we're not, you know, able to do what the fuck we want to do with our question, then that means that God isn't where it should be in society, and the crime is out of place because the fathers are not in the home because they're pushing us out, you know, because he has a personal fucking problem. So he makes it out to be a major fucking problem and starts pulling in other fucking people. The Nazis, the Klan do it all the time. They tell Christians every fucking day of the week, I represent you. We are a Christian organization. We're a terrorist organization, but we're a Christian organization, right? And we represent all white people. And when white people do not say, and you said this early in the show, and we have both said this, and we've heard Malloy say this, and Bill Press say this, and a bunch of other people say this. If people are sitting around and talking about racist nonsense, vilest nonsense, and you sit there and don't say any goddamn thing, you're part of the fucking problem. Now, you might lose your job, because I have. You might lose your friends, because I have. Okay, you might not be invited to a lot of motherfucking parties, and that's, you know, kind of where the fuck I'm at. You know, my social circle has gotten down. But the point is, you have to tell people, look, man, why did you have to say that? Well, you know, he's a chink, man. I didn't mean anything by it. Just say, I don't like that. Well, you're not Chinese. That's not the point. You know, if somebody said, nigga, you'd be mad. Oh, that's different. Why? Because it's us? You know, come on.
Yeah.
I do it with Native people, too. You know, it's like, what's going on here with this? And it's not that I'm kissing white ass. It's just like, wait a motherfucking minute. If we don't learn to have respect for each other objectively, then this shit isn't going to motherfucking work. It's not going to goddamn work. And that's when the violence fucking comes, because people get frustrated because they're not being fucking heard. Now, yeah, we can make a lot of arguments on whether or not they should have done the action the way they did. And I'm not against it per se. I'm just saying, if you're going to do that, go to the GOP that says that we're not racist.
Well, and you raise an important issue there, Angry, because I got something sitting here in my little stack of stories. Did you happen to catch, because it's a question we've all asked a number of times, did you happen to catch the story about what happened when Black Lives Matter went to a Clinton event up in Boston?
No.
It starts with this story came from Common Dreams. It starts with a report in the New Republic, who apparently were given some sort of exclusive access to what was going to happen. I know.
If it wasn't a conservative left paper, then I wouldn't, you know, but it's
Black Lives Matter activists headed off to a Hillary Clinton campaign stop in Keene, New Hampshire. Left from, I guess, Boston or some such. Five of them, including Black Lives Matter Boston founder Dinesha Yancey. They got there and said, "We're Black Lives Matter. We want in there." And they said, and security said, "Well, good for you. The overflow room is over here. You can't come in." And so they quietly and politely walked to the overflow room, where they sat and watched Senator Clinton give some sort of a speech in Keene, New Hampshire. And then afterwards, it was reported that they were given 15 minutes with Dr. Secretary Senator Clinton, at which point they declared victory. But does that not give you, I mean, does that not tell you a little something?
Yeah, that raises a lot of questions if that's true. You know, because one, I would like to know why the New Republic got this exclusive, being who they are, being the, you know, their history being what it is.
And apparently when they did get their meeting with her, according to the activists, let's see, the New Republic says, asked whether Clinton actually proposed policies in the meeting, Jones said, "Not that I recall, no. In fact, I know that she didn't, because she was projecting that what the Black Lives Matter movement needs to do is X, Y, and Z," to which we pushed back to say that it is not her place to tell the Black Lives Matter movement or black people what to do. And the real work doesn't lie in the victim blaming that implies. And that was a rift in the conversation. Jones said that the meeting concluded without any aggression and that the meeting was respectful. Where was the respectfulness for Bernie Sanders? Not once, but twice.
Yeah, see, you know, you have to ask. Well, see, first off, I'm not aware of this. You know, people are not, you know, we're not talking about any of that at all. And it was just about, you know, them. And I was wondering, you know, did they go anyplace else?
Yeah, I love the fact that apparently she did a little white-splaining.
Well, see, yeah, that's troublesome, because, you know, if they got to sit down with Clinton, then what are they trying to say, that they were able to get a sit down with Clinton so they didn't get one with the Sanders campaign, and this is why they did what they did?
No, I don't think that claim is being made. Because, frankly, I'm thinking the Sanders campaign would probably gladly sit down.
Well, maybe not. Well, at this point, they probably would, simply because they have to, because they've been pushed into a corner. But what I'm trying to say is it looks bad, and it's not so much that it looks bad. It's that this is not how you do things. You don't give your opposition, you know, ammunition to use against you. Because this can be twisted, and it is being twisted, a million different ways. And now Trump will be justified in the minds of a lot of people who are already paranoid, who are already hateful, who already didn't want to hear anything about Black Lives Matter because they don't give a fuck about Black Lives, they can now, you know, point to this and say, oh, well, look at the arrogance of these motherfuckers, especially when two black women do this, because the angry black woman, you know, syndrome, right? You know, that appellation, you know, that's going to come up. It's already there.
Well, what's interesting, because they created, I mean, this is a heck of an interesting story that isn't getting a hell of a lot of coverage. They created a hashtag, angry, hashtag haul up Hillary, H-O-L-L-U-P Hillary. And they sent out a tweet that says, huge thanks to everyone tweeting about haul up Hillary action. We've gotten the attention of Hillary Clinton staff and they are working with us. Which immediately received the response, clarify what you mean by working with you all. How so?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And another person responded and said, funny, considering there are literally zero haul up Hillary tweets before yours just now. Care to elaborate?
Yeah. See, who's she working for? This is what I want to know. What is her activist history? You know, I mean, somebody, you know, found some stuff online that she was a Sarah Palin supporter when she was in high school. And, you know, yeah, it's possible that your politics can change because supposedly her parents are very conservative. But you pointed out her religious stuff.
Oh, right? Crazy. I mean,
you know,
woo!
Bree Newsom was talking about God, too, which I really thought should have been left out of this when she took the Confederate flag down there in South Carolina. But, you know, I really want to know, what is the history of this chick as an activist? Where did she come from? Both her and her partner. Because a lot of this, you know, if what you're telling me is true, being reported out of the New Republic, you know, people need to fucking analyze this and ask questions. And this is exactly what the fuck I've been trying to get people to do. It's just like when Bush's nephew...
When was the last time the New Republic broke anything?
Never. I mean, not since the 60s. Not since goddamn Vietnam. I mean, even when the Pentagon Papers came out, they almost didn't want to write about it. You know? They almost didn't want to touch it. That's the conservative wing of the Democratic Party. And they haven't budged since the late 60s. You know, and they probably never will. But like I said, you know, here you got Bush's nephew. He went down to Mexico. I didn't even know that this was legal. He went down to Mexico and stumped for Bush, basically saying that the GOP is not racist. And, you know, when your family is up in the States working in the fields and shit, if they get a chance that they can, you know, shout for Bush for those that are able to vote. Look at me, I'm brown, you know, and hey, the GOP is out there for you.
Well, this,
and you know,
this story just gets more and more interesting. Again, it's over at Common Dreams, the whole breakdown is. CNN had a report on it.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, and they said, but listen to this. I mean, this is, you could sit down and just play some real fun little mind games with yourself over this. Initially, the meeting between Clinton and the protesters was going to be covered by pooled members of the media. But Nick Merrill, a spokesman for Clinton's campaign, said the Black Lives Matter protesters asked for the event not to be recorded by the media once they were informed journalists would be let in. Members of the media were never in the room with Clinton and the protesters. A Clinton aide said the protesters asked those in the room to stop recording and photographing during the first moments of their meeting with Clinton. Because of that, the aide said, the campaign did not escort anyone else in after that. But Yancey cast doubt on the Clinton campaign's reason for journalists not being let in the event. We said we did not want to take a photo with her, Yancey said. The only thing that we were asked about was whether we wanted to include photos. When asked whether they were asked to allow members of the media in, Yancey said, nope, we were not asked that. The Black Lives Matter members filmed their meeting with Clinton, however, and plan to put the video out. So they were going to have exclusive control of their of whatever that meeting was, the ability to edit it to their own liking. And no offense, when that happens on our side, it's as icky as when it happens with the edited, dummied up, faked up, frauded up, rubed up, jimmied up Planned Parenthood videos.
Planned Parenthood, Acorn.
Why, if you are trying to draw national attention to your movement, why don't you let the media in? And
exactly.
you know me, angry. I'm not the the defense committee for the for-profit media.
No, you don't have to be. It's just analytical.
But if you've got multiple cameras in there, then you got multiple people reporting on it. And bang, you've got greater visibility.
Yeah, but again, analytically, when you look at this, there's nothing progressive about that. The whole point of activism is to bring that light, that media attention in there.
Yeah.
And the fact that they did not do that and they want that kind of control sounds a lot like the Center for Medical Progress. Right? You know, in terms of Planned Parenthood, you know, ACORN, you know, the James O'Keefe. I mean, what is his history? When he broke into, what was it, Senator Mary Landrieu's office in Louisiana? Wasn't that him? James O'Keefe?
Yeah. Stone cold busted.
Now, he was doing some Watergate type shit, right?
Yeah, he was busted for a felony, and he was allowed to plead out by a compliant prosecutor to a misdemeanor.
Yeah, but my point is, he looks like Alfred E. Newman. He's a young white guy, one of these young conservatives, and his whole point is to go out there and muck things up. And that's why I'm saying, I mentioned Bush's nephew. They used him to fuck up the minds, you dig, of voting people, of brown people, you know, to confuse them. And that's what a lot of this is about. So when we talk about Asian provocateurs, you know, who is this person working for? Why would they not bring the media in there when that's the entire goal of the Black Lives Movement? People who are associated with that really need to be asking themselves some fucking questions. And, you know, I'm going to, you know, leave out with this and let you take some other calls and roll this around. Because, you know, in the 60s, on the March on Washington, a lot of people know this in the black community, but outside it's kind of, nobody really discusses this. You had what were called the Big Six. Ralph Abernathy, Martin Luther King, Andrew Young, can't remember exactly who else was there. They met with the Kennedy brothers together and Vice President Johnson in the White House because the Byard Rustin, who got kicked out of the movement because he was a communist and because he was gay, right?
Right.
And Abe Philip Randolph, they are the two that actually got the March on Washington organized. They got that together. And they had planned to go to the airport and lay down there and just, you know, no planes were going to take off or land. They were going to take over the streets. They were going to intend to freeze the Capitol. So everybody knew this because they went to the government and said, yeah, this is what we plan to do. We're having a protest and this is what they plan to do. Now, King was not involved in that. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference wasn't involved in that. So when they met with the Kennedy brothers, this is what supposedly was done. They said, look, we don't like what the hell you're trying to do. And King said, look, man, no, not King, Abernathy said, look, we're not in charge of that. We're not the ones that came up with that. It doesn't have anything to do with us. These are some radicals. It's not us. And then they said, okay, well, this is what's going to happen. We're going to give you $250,000. We're going to put you at the head of the movement. That's how King got invited and got to be a part of that.
There's a history here, because what Bruce Dixon said over at Black Agenda Report was that the whole Black Lives Matter thing with Martin O'Malley and Bernie at Netroots Nation was a big carnival act. It was a fraud.
Yeah,
because he said Hillary Clinton wasn't there, and that, you know, Netroots Nation, there's a lot of people there who are hustling, trying to get noticed by the Democratic donor class. And you know what? I think that I'm not going to argue with that assertion. I think it's true. So what he says is that by doing what they did at Netroots Nation, Black Lives Matter was basically putting on a show for the money, the people with the money, without running the risk of alienating the candidate with whom the people with the money have closest affinity.
That's right.
You know, cherchez l'argent, right? You know, follow the money. Cui bono, that's baby.
That's right. She wasn't there. And, you know, to try to ruin their ability and to cause a big disruption amongst the white liberals, who are already kind of, you know, not really honest with themselves about a lot of their privilege, you know, because they were the first ones to start yelling. And then a lot of people started talking and saying, well, you know what, maybe that guy has a point. You know, why are black people angry with me? You know, and until white people, and that's the discussion white folks need to have with each other. You know, we have privilege. When are we going to acknowledge that shit? But because that discussion isn't happening, and it's not really the responsibility of Black Lives Matter to do that. It's really the responsibility of white folks.
Sure it is.
You know, but motherfucking, you know, the timing, everything that you're telling me now, because I wasn't aware of a lot of this. But analytically, you have to look at that and assume that she's working for Clinton. You know, or, let's just say she might be working for a conservative interest that has an interest in seeing Clinton get a certain amount of black votes. Because remember, when she was running the first time, before the whole Crocodile Tears incident went down, Rupert Murdoch of Fox News
and
his Saudi partner gave her $10 million. That was a lot of money. We keep hearing about Sheldon Adelson with his $10 million, but people forgot that Rupert Murdoch did the same goddamn thing. But he did it with Clinton. And then when she fell out, then he went over to Romney. But that's not how it started out. The Clintons are Republicans. When Bill said that he was a pro-business candidate when he was running the first time, I took him at his motherfucking word. And I believed him even more when NAFTA and GATT were passed. People forget this. You know, people, you know, they realize that the memory of the public is fucking short. You know, just like when Hitler said, hey, who the fuck remembers the Armenian genocide? He looked around. They said, nope, man. He said, yeah, nobody gives a shit, so nobody would give a fuck about this either. And it's the same thing. You know, here we already have the textbooks have been changed because the Republicans are goddamn screaming, and you have Uncle Ben fucking Carson, who can't make up his mind what the fuck he wants to do, another human fucking lawn jockey, who says, if you read this, you'll want to join ISIS. He's already compared the founding fathers to ISIS. Fuck Ben Carson. He's a freak. He wants attention, just like Piyush Jindal. They want attention.
I don't often say things and then say I'm hanging on to this and I'm using it again and again and again. But in Ben Carson's case, I'll make an exception. He is a politically and historically undereducated meat mechanic. He's very, very good, apparently, at cutting on people's brains. But apparently, in order to become that good, you have to do so at the exclusion of every freaking thing else. No political science, no history, no anthropology, no psychology. No speech classes, no journalism, no.
No, but you see, the one thing that he's fucking expert at, other than working on people's brains, is navigating white society, because he didn't learn how to kiss ass.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I'm saying that because I know that's sometimes the only way I could get a fucking paycheck. You have to kiss ass. If you deal with a fucking cop, the majority of black people that are being wiped out by fucking police officers are being fucked up because they don't kiss ass. They're not kissing that guy's ass.
Yeah, they're not being sufficiently obsequious to power.
Yeah, so here's Donald Trump coming up with his racism.
That's just the step-off rule and the eyeball rule for 2015, isn't it?
Well, pretty much, that's what I'm saying. Donald Trump is ahead because he's saying, I'm white and I'm an American. You should be kissing my motherfucking ass. Period. And if you don't kiss my ass, we'll take your fucking oil. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he told American soldiers they had the right to take the women into a fucking country. You know,
let me ask you a quick question. I mean, you've done activism. I've done activism. When you know that somebody has said that you're not going to be welcome, and you're a real live, honest to God activist, isn't that sort of like a red flag to you, kind of daring you to do it? I mean. We've seen it in Appalachia. So when Donald Trump says he wants to punch a woman from Black Lives Matter in the face, wouldn't you expect that they would show up at a Trump event?
Well, we'll see. I'll bet that there will not be any comeback from the Black Lives Matter movement to Trump or any other Republican. Because if they were going to, they would have done so already, if they really understood what the fuck was going on. That's why I started questioning the Bernie Sanders thing.
Well, the other thing that underpins this, and you know, I don't want us to wear out the topic, but I think it crosses lines into other areas that are really quite meaningful. You know, the two women in Seattle said, referred to the people there as white supremacist liberals.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Okay. And is there a race problem inside what is the so-called progressive movement?
Of course, there always has been.
And is that? But okay, so then I think we both agree the answer is yes, because there is a race problem in every aspect of this country, cradle to grave, for over 400 years. This country is one great big race problem. I was talking on Facebook with my old buddy Joe Vecchio, who used to broadcast on the Horn, and he was talking about how the Southerners, you know, they're never blah blah blah, and you know they need to be led to progressivism. You know, goddamn, the South had very progressive elements about it for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
The South voted FDR. I can show you a photograph of FDR in my hometown where there were people hanging out of windows and standing on roofs just to get a glimpse of the man who had saved their white asses from starvation.
Yeah, but see, but okay. That's the key word.
Right.
That's the key word.
And
they were progressive when it came to general shit that affected white people.
And race is the break point. And so having said that, the reason I say all of that is, sure, there's a race problem inside the progressive movement. But great googly moogly angry. Isn't it minuscule as compared to the race problem inside the GOP? As compared to the race problem inside this country generally?
Well, see, yeah and no. And I'm being very serious about that. It's a big yeah and no. Because even with a lot of progressives, it's almost like, okay, if you wear your hair naturally, you know, as an African person, it's kind of tolerated, right? It's tolerated, and there are degrees of
it. I'm a progressive. Who the f*** am I that I give a f*** about what anybody's hair looks like?
Because a lot of it comes down to what people personally are emotionally comfortable with. A lot of folks that come out of Indiana...
I'm a lot more scared of pasty-faced, doughy white men who shave their heads.
Well, again, well,
I mean, I'm not yelling at you, angry. You know that.
No. But what I'm trying to get to is, you know, racism itself. We have to again be clear with the language. Racism defines a system. Xenophobia, ethnic and racial and religious bias and prejudice is something else. You can have racism and not have racial hate. That's entirely possible. Megyn Kelly is a perfect example of that. You can have sexism and not necessarily, I don't hate women. I just think that they need to stay home. I think they need to be subservient, but I don't hate them. I would never beat up on them, right? We say that about gay people a lot, right? I don't hate gay people, but I don't think they should be beat up on, but I don't think they should have rights.
Well,
it's the same sort of thing.
I don't, you don't, but
it's the same sort of thing. You know, you have a lot of white folks that are okay with black people, provided they act white. That's why Obama was perfect.
So you're basically making a larger reference to that scene between Gene Wilder and
Richard Pryor,
Cleavon Little in Blazing Saddles, where Gene Wilder looks at him and says, "Well, what did you expect? Welcome, Sonny. Marry my daughter." I mean, is that it? Is that where we are?
It's always been that way, Bob.
Well, I know it's always been that way, but you're telling me, angry, that we've made no goddamn progress whatsoever.
Well, you can go on YouTube and look at the different studies that have been done by universities when they speak to millennials about race. They're just as bad as their parents. They just don't act on it. They listen to the music. I mean, how many people were listening to, Little Richard, what have you, but would never allow their daughter to bring home a black fellow.
Oh, that was the entirety of the American South.
Yeah, so I mean, it's the same attitude was in the North. You know, Philadelphia, Chicago, New York City wasn't very much different. There was segregation, unofficial, in New York and Philadelphia and Newark, New Jersey, for decades, and the schools are still segregated. It's unofficial, but you go and you look at the numbers, you see what it is. It's the same thing I've been saying to you, to everybody else. If the average white person here in the majority wanted things to be different, things would be different. But in order for things to be different, you have to look at the society. It doesn't matter. You have to say, well, I personally did this. But you do have to say to yourself, I'm personally taking advantage of this, maybe not in cash, maybe not having a big house, because that's where a lot of these, you know, poor white folks are pissed, because they're like, well, I have to work too, and I don't have anything. Yeah, but you're not being shot in the street. You're not being denied jobs because you're white. You know, if somebody is prejudiced towards you, it's because they look at your economic status and say, no, that's a poor white person. You know,
or
poor
they,
white
or they,
trash,
or they look
redneck,
at,
and I don't want to deal
they,
with you.
They look at, listen, I think we all carry a little. I think we all carry our own kind of baggage, and I acknowledge mine. I judge people. I judge people every day, and my particular gig, my particular hang up, isn't gender. It's not race, ethnicity, whatever we want to call it. It's intellect. I judge people based on whether or not they are stupid. And so, no, I think we all have to deal with racism. I think all males have to deal with issues of misogyny that are baked in. Every
and
last,
you know how
every,
it
every
is when you
one.
Challenge men.
Yeah.
Men but, stop talking to me. You know, they don't want to talk.
But I, you know... The cross I have to bear is stupidity. I can't stand it. It drives me nuts. I mean, I can stand and, you know, engage in idle banter. Yeah, nice weather we're having. Yeah, you betcha. I can do that. But the minute he says, and then there's that there Obama.
Yeah, but where is he getting his information? I mean, when we
I know
look
where
at Fox
he's,
News.
I live where I live. I know where he's getting his information. Fox yeah. News and church. And probably more of it from church than Fox News, because church is an amplifier of Fox News inside mm-hmm. the evangelical fundamentalist community.
And Fox News has totally dumbed down between them and George W. Bush. When he admitted to the European press that he was a perfect example of what a D-minus student could do. In America, you know, he called himself bragging about being a failure in school but becoming president. I mean, he didn't tell him about his coke habits and his drinking and what have you. You know, but this is what he said. And then it got to be, I've said this to my wife, it's got to the point now where people accept the lowest common denominator for anything. They don't want to think about anything anymore. You know, you have, what was that? I told you before, there was a study in Oklahoma. Oklahoma, Brother Bob. Oklahoma, where they asked them who the first president was, and they said Lincoln. That's a problem.
Well, and
that's a problem.
And see, I'll say this much, and I'm probably putting my own feet in the oil, even by saying this angry. But what a lot of white folks. Well, here I am speaking for the race. Well, goodness me. A lot of white folks who consider themselves intelligent see culturally different behavior and assume that that in its own right is a mark of intelligence. Music being a big one. Or white folks complaining about fashion choices. Okay? You with me?
Yeah,
so,
I'm with you.
So a white person will see behavior that they think is ignorant being perpetrated by a person of color, and they'll write that all off to race. Whereas if they see it, if they see a white person behaving stupidly, they have no problem saying, that guy's a goddamn fool. And that's what I mean when I say that issues of race are absolutely baked all the way in on the subatomic level of everything that happens in this country.
Well, not just this country. I mean, we have to look at it in a broad sense.
I know because I listened to Richard Pryor, that because he was, of course, speaking for the monolithic black community, that black folks look at white folks and say, white people. We generalize each other.
Well, I was going to say, you know, within the African community, right, you have, you know, shaved, you know, bigotry. So, you know, I'm lighter than most.
And again,
people.
Because everything's...
That's the problem.
everything's a media reference to me. Yeah, Julian Bond and Garrett Morris, Saturday Night Live, back when it could be edgy and really challenge things, and that skit about black perspective, where Julian Bond is explaining to Garrett Morris the racial biases inherent in standardized testing, and it's all going real well until Julian Bond, who's very light, looks at Garrett Morris, who is very dark, and says, well, obviously, that's because, Garrett, light-skinned black people are much more intelligent than dark-skinned black people.
Mm-hmm.
And the skit is beautiful, and it's precious, and it's funny, and you could not get away with it in 2015 for nothing, any more than the skit between Richard Pryor and Chevy Chase.
Yeah, but like
but
I was telling my wife...
That was almost a more honest attempt at some sort of comedic and yet serious interchange of ideas than anything we can do now.
Yeah, but you're talking at a time when Americans understood satire. Do you really think Laugh-In could do anything today?
Well, there's probably no market for it. Oddly enough, there's 160 channels and nothing on, but no market for it.
You know, I still watch reruns of that. You know, yeah. I mean, all of it is actually still relative. Vietnam, misogyny, racism, class division, homophobia. I mean, it's all in there. You know, I mean, they were dinged mostly for the anti-war message. You know, but again, you know, like I was telling my wife last night, Anwar Sadat, when he was still alive, I can't remember the American actor, black man, played him in a TV role here in the States. The Sadat government actually wrote, not government, but the his people wrote letters to the station saying, how dare you have a black man play Anwar Sadat? Anwar Sadat is Arab. Now, you know what the fuck Anwar Sadat looked like.
Anwar Sadat was an African, please.
But in Egypt, he wasn't black, you see? And that's Africa, you understand? You know, you have more rights than I do, but I have more rights than the average black guy did. What they call the quote-unquote sub-Saharan African, because of the racism. Because of the racism. If you're Arab, if you're, you know, a mixture between an Arab and like European, European African maybe, you know, like the old Rhodesian type bullshit, you know, colored, as is usually said on the continent,
yeah.
You can get by a little bit. You can get by a little bit. Indians have a little bit more privilege, you know, but there's also
right,
a lot of hatred
because it is to the benefit of the white superstructure to create those degrees. I mean, the Spanish invented the whole idea of degrees of blood during the conquest of the New World.
Yeah.
So that, you know, if you had, you know, one native ancestor, you were better off than somebody had two, and somebody who had two was better off than someone who had four, etc. And it gets applied into the black community with quatroons and octoroons and mulattoes and you know, the white people made a real study out of it because it worked to their advantage, because it keeps, I mean, if light skinned black is the same as dark skinned black and you're both being equally oppressed the same way, then the issue is with the oppressor. Our friends in the LGBTQ community can tell you the same thing. The bigotries and prejudices that exist in the trans community, beautiful post-op transsexuals are at the top of the ladder. Okay, post-op transsexuals are right below them. But any post-op transsexual is better than a pre-op transsexual. A transsexual is better than a transvestite. A transvestite is better than a cross-dresser. And, you know, it's all... I go back to the lessons I learned from Dr. Seuss. It's all sneetches. And I know that's a sweeping generalization from a really white guy. But damned if it doesn't seem like it's got some legitimacy to it.
Well, a butch versus femme. Marine Corps versus United States Army. You know, I mean, you have rivalries. And it's part of human nature to some degree. But, you know, and, you know, what the, I can't remember his name, he was the former president of Japan. He said that, and he was dinged for this, and he did apologize. But he was being factual. It really wasn't so much, it was a racist statement, but it wasn't done with malice. I mean, it wasn't done with xenophobia. He said that he felt that one of the reasons that the United States had the problems that it had, so many different minorities. They can't be one people. He wasn't necessarily wrong about that. But see, where the argument comes in, and where, what a lot of young people of color in this country don't remember because they haven't been taught. Most of our leaders have been assassinated. They've been imprisoned for life. Albert Woodfox is still sitting in a goddamn box, longest prisoner sitting in solitary in the world, 40 motherfucking years. He's still in there because the white racists that run the fucking prison system refused to let him go, even though three courts have said that he should be released. He is a political prisoner, but that's being ignored. He's being ignored because he's a black man. Leonard Peltier sitting in prison. Because he's native, they will ignore him, right? And they have done what they could, Mumia Abu-Jamal, to get us to fight amongst each other. You know, to get, you know, Paul White to get, you know, against
right,
minorities
because,
to
you
keep
know,
playing
if,
this stuff off.
If the political prisoner in the United States that you advocate for is Leonard, then you know you've got to squabble with somebody who thinks that Mumia needs to be out first. They all need to be out. But, no, it's far
better
to keep...
Yeah, but who really holds the strings?
Yeah,
white
right.
folks hold the strings
right.
in the masses.
And the power structure is who you need to be talking to, not squabbling. Oh, dear God, I got a feeling I'm somehow or another in trouble. By the way, Marty and Ron and Raleigh both chimed in and said the Anwar Sadat film, that was Louis Gossett Jr.
Yeah, yeah, and, I got the face, but I couldn't think
yeah,
the name.
And you get fan mail. Jenny in Milwaukee says, I love Angry, and... the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Dan, says, I'm so happy that Angry called back tonight because I found his conversation with you last night far too short. So we are getting to cover a little bit of extra ground.
You mentioned
those remarks about America has problems because we're so internally different. And of course, every 4th of July, there's some white guy or woman who will stand up and say, and you know... Our greatness is because we're a melting pot. On the other hand, though, if we talk about wanting universal health care or a social safety net that really takes care of everybody, what does the white wing holler right out of the gate? Well, you know, I mean, sure, Sweden and Norway and Germany and those countries, Denmark, sure, those countries can have social welfare states because... Well, they're homogeneous, which is another way for you know that's your upscale Klansman saying they don't have Negroes, they don't
have a
native population, they don't have Asians, they don't have they don't have the you know in other words they're saying well you know if we were just white we everything would be fine, which is essentially what America up to the civil rights era is. We'll do everything for white folks and next to nothing for people of color, natives, anybody else, and everything will be okay. I mean, I'm convinced that the whole reason the Republican Party wants to take apart Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment insurance, any of that, the whole reason for all of that, Angry, is because this is becoming a darker nation. And the white folks in the grand old party, oh, we'll burn it to the damn ground before we'll see them get it. We didn't work for this.
Well, that's what they've been saying. But again, they've been saying that since Reconstruction. It really isn't new. The only thing that's new is they are a lot
more. Yeah, so when are we going to take them at their damn word?
Non-white people. Well, look, man, they're going to do what they're going to do. But again, we're not really analyzing a lot of these cases, and we really need to look internationally sometimes. For example, you know, people like Brigitte Bardot, you know, running around with Marie Le Pen and all the other Nazis in France. I mean, she's an animal lover, but she's also a neo-Nazi. So, you know, they don't want any more Arabs and Africans coming in. Well, one of the reasons that they were able to get any traction with that was because the social system, especially under Mitterrand, who was a socialist, really got stretched because they were, you know, allowing a lot of Africans in. France and Africa, Senegal especially, they have a history. But those men also have more than one wife. So they would bring over each wife and three or four kids they had with each wife, which he was able to maintain in Senegal. But now he's in France.
Right. So if all these anti-immigration white wingers want folks to stay home, why the hell can they not see that the best way to do that is to quit screwing up the home countries? I mean,
well, of course, but there's no profit in that.
Donald Trump wants to build a wall between us and Mexico. He doesn't want to build one between us and Canada, but, you know, to keep the Mexicans out. And of course, it's all, you know, to Donald Trump, from the Rio Grande South, it's all Mexico. Never mind Peru, Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, yeah. Whatever. It's all Mexico down there. But he wants, so he doesn't want them to come here, but by the same token, he can't seem to comprehend that we're the one that created the crisis.
Oh, he knows that. He doesn't give a fuck. He knows what he's doing. His people are getting visas to bring people over. There are ads in Mexican papers in the border towns for McDonald's, for chicken factories, you know, production factories, for sausage factories. They're shipping people in here by the busloads. They're not really trying to keep them out. He's just playing populist partisan politics. Really, because he doesn't really want to be goddamn president. The man has no political fucking experience. He has no legal fucking experience. He's just doing this, and he's just getting away with it. You know, I mean, we watched the other chicken guy out there in Texas, Ross Perot, do the same goddamn thing. He wasn't serious. He wasn't serious. His ideas were stupid. He just kept coming up with a whole bunch of Texas witticisms and, you know, some Kentucky vintage thrown in.
Yeah, there's going to be a giant sucking sound.
And people thought it was cute, and they liked it. It's the same thing with Trump. He's bombastic. He's threatening. He's got a lot of money. He doesn't apologize for his fucked up goddamn hairstyle. You know, he's got trophy wives all over the fucking place. He represents the United States. And he knows that. And there are people out here who are so fucking short-sighted, don't vote for him just out of spite. Just out of spite.
Oh, and by the way, what's gonna happen? And I'm sure this will drive the right-wingers crazy because they think it's a foreign country. What's going to happen when Puerto Rico completely collapses?
Nothing, because it's a colony, and it'll be treated like any other colony. They'll probably just start restricting boat lifts and shit, and all of the people who are going to try to get out of there, like the Mario boat lift, and that'll be it. You know, and all of the Puerto Ricanos in Puerto Rico, in Philadelphia, in Nueva York, motherfucking Newark, New Jersey and shit, and in Massachusetts, they're going to be trying to scramble to get their fucking relatives, out of there, which they're already doing anyway. If you watch the Spanish language news, they're doing their best to get their fucking relatives out of there because that's how bad things have been bad in Puerto Rico for a long
man,
fucking time.
But once Puerto Rico has collapsed and it's been depopulated a little bit, I only mention this because we're smack dab in the anniversary of Katrina right about now. Once it's been depopulated a little bit and the economy's collapsed and everything and the land values go to nothing, man,
oh, yeah.
Won't it be an awesome place to go down and gentrify?
Oh, sure. It's already happening.
Oh, I know.
It's already happening. The hotels up there, they still have water. Right? They still have water. They still have water to make the Coca-Cola, because I think there's a bottling plant there, or at least there was.
Plenty of water for the Bacardi distillery, I'm presuming.
Yeah, you know, that's still going to happen. And, of course, they're going to try to do that one. It's real close. and then you're opening up things with Cuba. So you can have cigars, muchachas, música. It's going to be all of that, man. And the people are going to make money. And the folks who can't afford to leave or can't get on a raft to get the fuck out of there, they'll be working in the hotels. They'll be shining shoes. There'll be prostitution in the hotels. You know, it'll be just like everywhere else in Latin America.
It'll be Cuba without, and we all we have to do is find a new Batista.
You know, and it won't be the Italian mobsters anymore because they really don't have that kind of power like anymore, right? I mean, they'll get a piece. They'll get a piece.
They'll wet their beak.
But, you know, hey, every ethnic group has their own mob. So those who speak Spanish will be there first. And whoever gets there first and is ready to, you know, repel borders, they'll keep it. You know, and just like Cuba, when it was Maya Lansky and the rest of these cats, they'll do business with them because they'll control the vice. Because there's got to be vice. There will be all kinds of rich people going down there. A lot of Republicans going down there. I told you, I used to know a fellow who used to be, you know, he was a male prostitute. He said that every time the Republican convention or they had some kind of Republican meeting came to town or he knew where one was, he was guaranteed to make enough money for the rest of the year. And he's pointed people out to me. He said, yeah, he's gay. He's gay. He's gay. And you can go someplace and take advantage like that? Just like Thailand. I have no respect for the government of Thailand. They're supposed to be Buddhist. But that is the number one goddamn destination for freaks, pedophiles, women abusers, snuff filmmakers. And you know, everybody knows what's going on, and nothing's done about it. Nothing's done about it. Even after that JonBenet Ramsey thing happened, and I would like to think it was Cheney to somehow pull some strings and got that sucker put on the plane and brought over here as a distraction, even though I can't remember what the distraction was about. But, you know, folks were talking about how the sex trade and how the human trafficking was going in Asia after that. Talked about it for about 2 weeks. And then after he was out of the news, nobody discussed it anymore, right? So when Puerto Rico isn't being discussed anymore, which is hardly being discussed anyway, hey,
well, that's kind
you're
of why,
on your own.
That's kind of why I felt like it was incumbent on me to at least make mention of it, because it's not in the news that much. Over on MSNBC, Jose Diaz-Balart will mention it once in a while.
Yeah, they'll mention it once in a while because they're just like, wow, they're kind of fucked up over there. Look at that. Hey, it's not here. Right? Be glad that you're here.
Yeah, but how is that not microcosmic relative to the mother country?
Man, there are people on the West Coast who don't even know that Puerto Rico fucking exists. If you're not from the East Coast of the United States, you don't know a fucking thing about Puerto Rico. Most folks don't know shit about Puerto Rico. Okay?
And of course, you know, I go all the way back to the early aughts. And, gee, I remember the sex slave traffic little problem in Guam.
Guam. Well, Guam's one of them. You also had the Black Clap over there. I'm sure you heard about that. Classified, supposedly.
We don't talk a lot about we don't talk a lot about our colonies, I think, because we don't like to remember that we have them.
No. Because hey, I remember being told in school, we don't have colonies, we have territories. And my father was distinct about it. He said, no, that was a motherfucking colony. We used to ship in there, you know, so on to do whatever. It's like, nah, man, it's always been denied. It's always been denied. Come on, there was no wipeout of Indians here. Indians just disappeared somehow. Manifest destiny was God, man.
Vast wilderness.
It's a vast wilderness. Anyway, Brad, you know, I didn't think we were going to go on this long.
That's okay. It was a dandy, and apparently it is appreciated, as do I.
I enjoy it, too.
Read up on the whole Hillary fail.
Oh, I will, because I see some, you know, I see a lot. Look, they're getting really sophisticated with their propaganda. You got to give them that. And you know, they're doing everything. I mean, when you started realizing in the mid-70s when the right wing was using grassroots, you know, knocking on doors, you know, picketing, right? Potlucks. It's like, wait a minute, that's all that lefty shit. What the fuck are you doing? Because they realized that it worked. So, you know, when James O'Keefe went to Acorn and was trying to frame a bunch of other people, basically taking lessons from the left and saying, okay, this is where they're open, this is where they're weak, because they're not coming in and saying what they actually represent. You know, when we go, we say to them, this is who we are, this is what we want to ask you, this is why we're asking you.
Yeah, for,
they don't,
you know,
do that,
for a bunch
because
of people
if they
that
had
hate,
to do that.
For a bunch of people that hate Saul Alinsky, the right wing is quite effective at employing his tactics.
They didn't know who the fuck Saul Alinsky was, or Gene Sharp, or anybody the fuck else until Glenn Beck stumbled upon that bullshit. Because one of his little intellectual V-Dev fucking white guys who thinks that, you know, David Duke is some kind of a fucking genius said, hey man, have you ever heard about this Jew, Saul Alinsky? Because you know that's what it was. You know that's what it was. But see, it kills me that fucking Glenn Beck can get away with doing what he's doing. He's a Mormon. Most of these people can't stand goddamn Mormons. The Klan doesn't like Mormons. They don't trust them, right? How come he gets carte blanche to do whatever the fuck he wants to do?
Yeah. By the way, before you head out and before I head out, a little bit in the way of a semi-breaking news story. Jimmy Carter.
Sounds bad.
Has
oh, yeah.
announced
yeah.
that cancer has spread to other parts of his body. He's 90 years old. He said, recent liver surgery revealed that I have cancer that is now in other parts of my body. I will be rearranging my schedule as necessary so I can undergo treatment by physicians at Emory Healthcare. And I don't want to seem bitter about this, but I'm going to be. If there's an ex-president who should live to be 500 years old, it's probably Jimmy Carter.
Yep.
Because America needs Jimmy Carter, because absent him, we're not long on conscience in this country.
And there's negative things we can say, that happened during, his tenure, but...
Yeah, but he didn't start any wars.
No.
And I think he made a legitimate attempt at being a decent human being and the president at the same time. And that's damn difficult.
Well, my main thing for him was he took care of home first.
Yeah, my
I have to give him that.
Yeah, there's a kick furniture moment in this article for me, though, from the AP. Jimmy, you're as resilient as they come, and along with the rest of America, we are rooting for you, Obama said in a statement.
Oh, yeah, I heard that on NPR.
And,
well, what else
and,
is he going
no,
to
no,
say?
No. I'm not expecting him to say anything else, but I'm not going to sit here and think that... Bubba No Brain out there who's been watching Fox News for 20 freaking years is hoping something good will happen and Jimmy's cancer will remarkably disappear. They ain't praying. No, they're not praying at the first United Mega Church and Herpetological Seminary for his well-being.
Or in Tel Aviv.
Well... No. I imagine in the settlements they're hooting "Die Jimmy, die." But you know what?
You know.
The truth is often bitter medicine.
Well, look, like I said, he's one of the few people you can actually point to and say statesman, as far as this country goes.
Yeah.
And his loss would really be a fucking kick in the ass to this place.
In the chat room, Arthur put it bluntly: No, the right wingers are rooting for the cancer.
Yeah, they would.
Remember,
come on,
it's prayer meeting Wednesday. This is the crowd that does imprecatory prayer.
Prayer.
Yeah. All right, we're out of here, Angry. Have yourself a good evening, my friend.
All right, my brother, and please support this man and help him get some equipment so he can do this across the nation. Peace.
Later. Ooh, I didn't think about it that way. Thank you, Angry. Do this across the nation. And we're getting there. We are making progress. About $1,300-$1,400 to go. There's hope. But from where I sit, we don't do the prayer thing and we don't ask for miracles. But our best hopes go out to Jimmy and Rosalind and the entire family. He will be missed. Anybody want to bet the funeral of Jimmy Carter is not the great big lavish masturbatory affair that Richard Nixon's or Ronald Reagan's was? Anybody? Yeah. I'm a bitter person sometimes. I'm sorry. Well, here endeth the prayer meeting Wednesday lesson. Thanks to everybody who helped out this evening. Thank you, Mark. Thank you very kindly for sponsoring the whole of prayer meeting Wednesday this evening. Thank you, and not forcing me and making it possible for me not to have to do any ciphering or gazintaing. Believe me, I appreciate it. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and acac.org. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.